Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Dave Love. I'm an associate scientist at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. So if you want to collaborate with a public health person, come find me later. This talk is going to be about the links between aquaculture and agriculture, and why do fish farmers care about good soil and healthy soil. And you may not naturally think about this, and I didn't really either until a couple years ago. I was at a World Aquaculture Society meeting, which is the equivalent in the fish world to this conference. And you know who are all the headline funders of the conference? It's just traditional agriculture companies. You got DuPont, Syngenta, and they're advertising commodity crops, soybeans, distiller corn, all these things to fish farmers. And it sort of was a wake-up call to me and led me to start thinking more deeply about these connections. So before I dive in, I want to acknowledge my collaborators at the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. A lot of the research I'm going to be presenting is from Jillian Fry, who is the PI on our study. We've got great collaborators in Paul West and Peter Engstrom and Graham McDonald, formerly of University of Minnesota, now McGill. And at University of Minnesota, we're working with them. It's the Institute on the Environment, and they're doing great work with us, helping us map crop use and the resource use associated with it. So first, I'm going to give you a brief intro of what is aquaculture, links between aquaculture and agriculture, and I'm mainly going to talk about crop use in aquaculture and the resulting conclusions of our own studies. So what is aquaculture? It's a lot of different things. It's in the top left side, we see different farmed animals, from trout in the top left corner, shrimp in the middle. The far right is oyster farming. The bottom left, we've got a salmon farm in Norway, which is a net pen operation. Tilapia living in tanks in the bottom center, and on the bottom right, this is a seaweed farm. So aquaculture can be a lot of different things. Today I'm just going to focus on farmed aquatic animals, because those are the ones that are predominantly receiving feed. So a little bit more background about aquaculture. Today about 50% of all fish that we eat are raised on farms, and the other 50% are caught in the wild. So aquaculture is any sort of farm-raised products. And you can see from this figure that since about the 1980s, the aquaculture industry has really expanded. And the reason being is that our wild capture fisheries have become either stagnant or collapsed. And the catch is stagnant, even though we're expanding the number of places that we're fishing. So in the grand human history of fishing, you know, the last, I don't know how many, 10,000 years since the fish hook was invented, we've had increased catches every year, every year, every year, until about 1980. And that's the point at which we reached the nadir. Technology kind of overcame the supply of fish in the ocean, and we're going to see a constant either flattening from good management or decrease over time for the rest of human history. So this is why aquaculture is here, to fill that gap. And most aquaculture comes from Asia. The U.S. only has about 1% of global aquaculture. One other point is that for a long, long time, farm fish were fed wild fish. About 1 in 5 wild fish is fed to farm fish. Because that this is this catch from wild capture is stagnant, that's really going to constrain the growth in aquaculture, which is a big deal. Aquaculture just surpassed beef production globally in 2010. So some advantages of aquaculture. So fish live in water. They're naturally buoyant, so they don't have to spend energy fighting gravity. They don't have to, they don't regulate their body temperature as much as land animals. So when they're fed, and they have a higher feed conversion or lower feed conversion ratio than other animals. So the amount of dry weight feed given over relative to the animal's weight over its life, it's more efficient at converting feed into animal tissue. And we're seeing a consolidation within the feed industry around in aquaculture. And sorry, this didn't really come out. The image didn't come out so cleanly. But this year, Cargill saw the writing on the wall, and that aquaculture is growing dramatically. And it bought out the largest Norwegian fish feed producer called EWAS. So now this makes Cargill the number two aquaculture feed producer in the world. They are the lead feed producer for salmon, shrimp, and tilapia, which are some of the major species. So this is a pretty clear sign that that a lot of people are seeing links between crops and fish farming. So what's in aquaculture feed? And this is sort of the, we're getting into the some of the details of the talk that I think you'll find really interesting. So aquaculture feed doesn't look all that different than pet food. It's an extruded product that's a mixture of different crops and minerals and animal byproducts. It's put through an extruder and to make these bite-sized pellets here. This is a guy tossing some fish feed into a pond. There are different types of feed. Some of them are made to sink, because they're fish that live on the bottom that want to eat the feed at the bottom. And there are other kinds of feed that float. Floating feed is good for fish that like to come up to the top to feed. Here's a typical feed from the catfish industry, from Purina. This is the back of the label, and I'm going to zoom in on the ingredients. Catfish eat a primarily plant-based diet, which is true for farmed fish, but maybe not so much for wild fish. But the top ingredients are soybean meal, ground corn, wheat, some rendered swine, some fish meal, but they're trying to reduce that because it's a very expensive ingredient, pig fat, ground oats, alfalfa meal, etc. So you can see the ingredient list, the top products are all plant-based crops. So globally, we use a lot of crops for both food and feed, and this is just to highlight the little niche that aquaculture has within that big spectrum of crops for food and feed. Let me wiggle something around and make it come back. So in blue, you can see crops that are used for human food, soybeans, cassava, wheat, maize. In green are crops that are used for animal feed, terrestrial feed. And in yellow here are crops used for aquaculture feed. So there's some crops that are used predominantly in humans, like wheat and rice. Others are mainly used for animals, maize, soybeans. And although the aquaculture feed use is rather small, aquaculture is a growing industry. So it's something to start to pay attention to. This is a really expansive list of all the different types of feeds used in a lot of different types of fish. And I don't want to overwhelm you, so I'm going to just zoom into one detail and give you an example of hybrid catfish. They can be fed either fish meal or soybean meal. And this is the fraction of feed that's made up of those constituents. This paper was put out this year. It's a pretty expansive list of all the different feed crops used in aquaculture. If you take all these feed ingredients together and then do a rank sum, these are the top crops used in aquaculture feed. Canola, soybean, maize, and on down the list. So it's quite a lot. Now, why are all these fish being fed crops? Well, it turns out that when you do these studies comparing fish that are more like grazers, like you would be like a pasture-based land operation system, grazers don't perform as well as fish given feed. And this is a figure put out by an FAO report that shows over the last 25 years or so, about two-thirds of the aquaculture industry is using fish feed. And not only that, but there are some industries within that, like salmon, trout, eel, shrimp, tilapia, that are almost 100% on commercial feed. And this is really amazing because 50 years ago, most farm fish were not given commercial feed. So think about a point in time in which chickens, pigs, dairy cattle, beef cattle were not given commercial feed. You'd have to go back, you know, 50 or 100 years. So for a lot of countries around the world, a lot of aquaculture industries, they're just starting to use commercial feed. So this is a new trend for them. And here's the a figure that shows the amount of fish feed that's used over time and the sources. And what I want you to pay attention to is in blue is the fraction that's made from marine sources or fish meal. And over time, that amount is going to stay pretty constant because, as I mentioned before, the amount of wild capture fish that we can use for fish feed is going to be fairly flat or declining. So as the aquaculture industry grows, it's going to be relying more and more on crop-based feeds. And you can see the growth and use of crop-based feeds here in green. I mean, this is a really amazing trend that I really want, if you walk away with anything from today's talk, is this slide, that there's going to be a big growth in the reliance of aquaculture on crops. So here's some results from our own work that just give you sort of a teaser about these connections and the implications. So here's a slide that shows the major soybean producers in the world, which are Brazil, Argentina, the U.S. That makes up about 80% of global soybean production. And it's a map that shows where they export to. So they do have a lot of European trading partners and a lot of trading partners in countries in Southeast Asia. But far and away, China is the biggest importer of soybean. Why is that? Well, China also happens to be takes about a 60% role in aquaculture production globally. And they're also the biggest pork producer and the biggest chicken producer in the world. So they have a very strong need to continue to import soybeans. And what's the implication of that trade path on resource use in the U.S. and in the other soybean-producing countries? And this is a figure that shows for soybeans exported to China, what is that environmental resource use? And we show here this plot in terms of the land area that's used by the U.S., Brazil, and Argentina, how much irrigation water is used, how much excess nitrogen is applied, and how much excess phosphorus is applied. And these are really important concepts because we're trying to tie back what is the use within the aquaculture industry and what is the relevant implications on the ground within the countries that are the crop producers. Based on our estimates, we saw that the U.S. is a really big water user to produce soybeans. And we think that about 8.5% of all soybeans in the U.S. are irrigated. That's going to drive up water use. In other countries that produce a lot of soybeans, they have rain-fed systems. So they're not using as much irrigation in Brazil and Argentina. However, they are using other nutrients like in Brazil, they're using a lot of excess phosphorus. And later in the talk, we're going to get into some of the health effects of what are those excess nutrients on the land doing. We expanded this study beyond just soybeans to also look at what's the resource use from several different crops, including canola, maize, nuts, wheat, and the implications for harvest area, irrigation, excess nitrogen, and excess phosphorus. And a couple of things to point out. So if you sum all the land area that's used globally to produce crops to feed to fish, that's equivalent to the landmass of Iceland. So we're talking about a fairly large land area that's being used to raise these crops. Let me just point out some details of the slide. In gray here, you see this dark black and then gray. Gray refers to global production, so how much resources are used for in the world. And the black dots are just the three exporting countries that we've picked on, Brazil, Argentina, and the U.S. for soybeans, but they would be other countries for other commodities. So some things to note from this slide are that Rapeseed, for example, uses a lot of area to grow crops and also has the most excess nitrogen that's used in it. Groundnuts, for example, use a lot of excess irrigation water. And irrigation water consumption for rapeseed seems to be sensitive to the regions of the world that it's grown in. So if we're thinking about the impacts of crops and to regions, it's variable, and we need to be very focused on what's the region and what's the crop that's being produced to study the environmental impacts of crop production for aquaculture. Here's another slide that's just sort of a theoretical piece that we conducted. And in the yellow are it's USDA data on the numbers of catfish farms per state. In blue, this is USGS data on water use to fill and maintain catfish ponds in the U.S. So you can see most catfish production happens in the deep south. As you can see, the big yellow dots and the deep dark blue for a lot of water is being used to fill these ponds. In total, about 360 million gallons per day is used to fill catfish ponds in the U.S., mainly in the deep south. Then we took one more step and looked at, so what are catfish fed? And if you remember back the recipe slide for catfish, it was a lot of different commodity crops. We assume that those crops are grown in the U.S. Why not? They're just a few states away in the Midwest. So if we use that assumption and then we tack on the water use per crop, we can come up with a map that shows here in green the states that use the states that grow the crops that are fed to the fish. So what this map essentially shows us is that our water use for catfish production is split between regions of the world where the crops are grown and regions of the world where the fish are grown. And it turns out that equivalent amounts of water are used to grow the crops as to raise the fish. They both use about 360 million gallons per day. So we've got some links between crop production and human health. We know excess fertilizer use has links to cancers and birth defects. Land-applied manures, which is going to be part of the next talk, has their issues between that and human health, and pesticide use. I'm going to just skip this slide, but tell you briefly the implications are that crops fed to fish, fish end up having different nutrient profiles if they receive fish oil as their primary fat source or if they receive vegetable oil. And it turns out that vegetable oil produces a fish that's less favorable in the fats that we think of when we want to purchase fish. So what we found in our study, to summarize, is that aquaculture is increasingly relying on agricultural crops as feeds. Crop-based ingredients are taking the place of expensive marine ingredients, and they're allowing aquaculture to keep growing at a really fast pace, about 8% growth per year, faster than any other type of animal agriculture. Now that aquaculture is using these crops as feed, they also need to be part of the solution in making sure that there aren't negative environmental and health externalities from raising crops. And using these crops may change the nutritional content of the aquaculture product themselves. And lastly, climate change we know is disrupting crops, it's disrupting fisheries, it's disrupting aquaculture. And now that we have these linked systems, we need to be thinking about how stresses in one area, like increased crop costs due to drought, might affect a shrimp farm in Bangladesh or in Malaysia. So we're seeing some really interesting connections here that groups are starting to think about resilience in agriculture and interconnectedness between systems. So thank you.